Hear voices.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
The Houston Coalition for Justice Not War would like to support KPFT local station board candidates who endorse and advance our peace priorities for KPFT. We would like to invite peace-oriented LIB candidates and voters to join us this Wednesday, December 17th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Leisure Learning Unlimited, 2990 Richmond Avenue on the 6th floor. You will have the opportunity to learn more about our peace priorities pledge to help KPFT better address the vital concerns of KPF listeners and Houston's peace community. Snacks will be served this Wednesday evening. Skip rush hour traffic and join for our peace priorities eat and greet. That's December 17th at LLU, which is Leisure Learning Unlimited, 2990 Richmond Avenue from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Peace.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening at 67 degrees in Houston on this nice Monday evening before Christmas. In our second hour, we're going to be doing one of JD's special Christmas stuff. All different type of queer music that deals with Christmas or written by queer people or whatever. Should be real exciting. In the first hour, we're going to be rather serious, talking about safety, walking in the community, dealing with that, and Chris Harrison from Q Patrol will be with us. You're listening to KPFT, but first, we go to the BBC in London for the news.
BBC News with Mary Small. The United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan has expressed hope that the capture of Saddam Hussein will accelerate the establishment of a new government there. In his first detailed statement since the arrest of the former Iraqi president, Mr. Annan called for a fair and open trial for Saddam Hussein. He didn't specify what form any UN involvement might take, but he said if the court needed to get help from outside, it should be considered.
Saddam Hussein has cast a rather long shadow over developments and over the transition process. With his capture, that shadow has been removed, and I hope this will help us move ahead with the transition period and also accelerate the process of reconciliation.
He emphasized that the UN remained opposed to the death penalty in principle. President Bush has refused to be drawn on whether he favors the death penalty for Saddam Hussein, but he said the former Iraqi leader would be tried in public and that the United States would work with the Iraqis on the procedure involved. The Americans are continuing to question the former Iraqi leader following his capture on Saturday. They say he's given them information that's allowed the identification and arrest of several top figures from his regime. Brigadier General Mark Hurtling said the information came from the initial interrogation on Saturday and from documents found at Saddam Hussein's hideout near Tikrit. Saddam Hussein's capture is continuing to have political repercussions in the United States. The frontrunner in the race to be the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, Howard Dean, has maintained his opposition to the war in Iraq. In a speech, he said that while the arrest was good news, it hadn't made America safer, nor would it ease the threat of global terrorism. One of Mr. Dean's Democratic Party opponents, Joe Lieberman, has responded by accusing Mr. Dean of promoting policies which would have left Saddam Hussein not in prison, but in power. You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. Six of the richest countries in the European Union have called for its future budget to be capped. In a letter to the EU's executive arm, the European Commission, the six say that individual Europeans won't understand if EU spending is exempted from cutbacks in member countries. The six, which include Germany, Britain and France, provide a quarter of the budget. Their call comes after Spain and Poland, principal recipients of EU money, blocked an agreement on a future European constitution at a summit. Juana Lungescu reports from Brussels. The letter of the six calls for the budget to be capped to 1% of the EU's gross national product from 2007 onwards. That would mean €25 billion less than what the European Commission is expected to propose. In a swift reply, the president of the Commission, Romano Prodi, said that with less money, it would simply not be possible to do what EU governments and the rest of the world expect in terms of foreign aid and improved border and immigration controls. The letter of the six countries will inevitably be seen by Spain and Poland as a threat. They stubbornly stood up to the EU's heavyweights over the Constitution. And now they stand to pay the price.
The American Secretary of State Colin Powell is expected to remain in hospital for several days following surgery for prostate cancer. The State Department in Washington said the operation went well, and Mr. Powell is likely to return to full-time work early in the new year. The Italian president, Carlo Azeglio Ciampi, has taken the rare step of refusing to approve a bill passed by Parliament. Mr. Ciampi, whose functions are mainly ceremonial, has asked legislators to reconsider a measure which critics say will allow the Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, to extend his growing monopoly of the Italian media. From Rome, David Willey reports.
The controversial law now has to be debated again by both houses of Parliament. The new media law has been bitterly criticised by Italy's left-wing opposition, which argues that it hands Silvio Berlusconi on a silver platter, as it were, the chance to extend even further his growing monopoly of the Italian media. Mr. Berlusconi already controls directly or indirectly 90% of Italian television. Under the new law, he will earn an ever bigger slice of television advertising revenue, both from his own channels and from the state broadcaster Rai.
The family of one of the best-known senators in the United States in the last 70 years, who began his political career as an arch-segregationist, has acknowledged that he fathered a mixed-race child in the 1920s. The senator, Strom Thurmond, died earlier this year. The family's statement came after the child he fathered revealed the relationship publicly. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Falinski.
And Owen Devlin.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
Tonight, we're going to be talking in the first hour about safety. Chris Harrison's going to be here from Q Patrol, and of course he's also going to be recruiting for Q Patrol, and there's definitely always a need for Q Patrol, and usually when these things happen, there's even more of a need for it. And Joan, you have a guest also.
That's right, Alan Tibbetts, who is the young man who was attacked over Thanksgiving weekend. He is a dancer, professional dancer from New York. He was in town over Thanksgiving for a World AIDS Day performance at Diverse Works, and he was attacked on the corner of Whitney and Avondale and was beaten pretty severely. And he's home in New York now, and he's going to call us and update us on his condition, as well as tell us how he's kind of been trying to put his life back together after what happened to him.
And in the second hour, J.D. is going to be doing a Christmas special.
Yeah, you refer to it as stuff.
Stuff. Christmas yes. stuff. Right. It's very, like stocking stuffers.
Yeah, very queer music by queer artists, or they're lyrically gay or lesbian, and it's stuff you're not going to be sick of, stuff you probably won't hear anywhere else.
Yes, it's not the same old stuff you're going to hear on Coda, definitely. A few things we want to talk about before we go to This Way Out and the news. First of all, we don't have the second or third segments of This Way Out because for some reason it wasn't uploaded over the public radio satellite system this afternoon. They did upload it on a website, but we weren't able to download it all at this point. So we will try to get some of it, play it in future, if it's timely in future programs. After Hours is going on the road. My evil twin sister, Jimmy Carper, is...
I thought you looked alike.
Yes. They're taking their show on the 20th of December to O, which is just down the street here, and they're going to do their entire radio show from O. That ought to be real interesting. And of course, Rahil will be there, wherever there's an open microphone, as we say. And that ought to be real good. They're going to be working with AFH, AIDS Foundation Houston, to donate condoms to be handed out during the event to promote safer sex and educate everybody on that.
What is O?
O is a bar. It is one of those bars in the Pacific Triangle area. It's on Pacific Street, actually. Yes, because it used to be called Pacific Street. And it used to be, before that, called...
The Barn.
The Barn.
Okay. Now I know where O is.
Okay. Three generations ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what it was called before then. It was probably somebody's home before then. If you haven't seen Angels in America, it's fabulous.
Yes.
HBO
yes.
played the second part, the second 3 hours
right.
of it.
But they're also showing individual hours during the week.
And tonight it's also on HBO, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're going to be repeating it a number of times because they did spend $12 million, or $60 million.
$60 million.
To
and it shows with the acting, with only the acting, it's great. Everybody, going to be up for an Emmy. It's terrific.
And also at the Greenway Plaza movie theaters, a part of Landmarks, The Event. It is a wonderful movie about somebody who is going to pass away. He's very sick, and he decides with his friends that he suffered enough, and it's time to take his life. And then basically the government comes after him or his survivors to deal with that. And the way it's a little bit, there's a little bit of confusion in there when they go back and forth between time, at least for me. But overall, it's a very good film, at least I recommend it at the Landmark Theaters.
He goes back and forth after he died and before he died.
Right, to sort of build up that story and give the background of it. Done in New York around before and after 9/11, so there's that element in it also. And I think that's about any other updates and news before we go to News Wrap? Okay, mm-hmm. Let's do News Wrap.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 13th, 2003. In what's believed to be the world's first decision by a nation's highest court on refugees from anti-gay persecution, Australia's High Court ruled this week not only that gays and lesbians constitute a particular social group who can qualify for asylum, but that a Bangladeshi couple could not be expected to remain closeted at home. Previously, Australia's Refugee Review Tribunal had recognized that gays in Bangladesh could face ostracism, police abuse, and criminal prosecution. Yet the panel rejected the couple's application on the grounds that they could avoid harm by being discreet about their sexual orientation. Amnesty International assisted in the men's appeal to Australia's top court, which ruled 4-3 that the Bangladeshi's application for asylum should be reconsidered. In affirming that the men had a right to live openly, the majority wrote that the 1951 Convention on Refugees would give no protection from persecution for reasons of religion or political opinion if it was a condition of protection that the person affected must take steps, reasonable or otherwise, to avoid offending the wishes of the persecutors. The men's attorney, Bruce Levett, illustrated that principle by saying, had Anne Frank sought asylum in Australia, she could have been told, go back to your attic, hide your Jewishness, and you'll be saved.
The names of the asylum seekers have been withheld for legal reasons, and it is not yet known when their application for asylum will be reconsidered. The men have lived together since 1994 and fled to Australia in 1999. Their claims of persecution in Bangladesh include rejection by their families, job loss, stoning, receiving 300 lashes, and being targeted for death in a fatwa issued by their local Islamic council. The High Court ruling could affect 40 to 50 gay and lesbian applicants per month in Australia alone, but is expected to have much broader impact, not only for other grounds for asylum there, but to influence other nations' decisions as well.
Italian gays and lesbians will be denied access to fertility treatments under a bill passed by 60% of the Senate this week. The strictly limited treatments that will be allowed will only be available to cohabiting heterosexual couples of childbearing age. Sperm and egg donations by third parties will be entirely banned, and their use will be punishable by fines equivalent to as much as $726,000. Italy's Chamber of Deputies already passed the bill last year, but will take it up again for minor adjustments before it is signed into law. Opponents have already begun gathering signatures to petition for a repeal referendum.
But last month, the Canadian province of Manitoba began to offer alternative birth certificates that offer two lines labeled simply name of parent, where the old forms listed father and mother. The provincial government views this as a natural extension of the law Manitoba enacted more than a year ago, which extended adoption rights to same-gender couples. Certificates of name changes have also been modified for domestic partners who wish to share a surname.
Legal same-gender marriages in Canada continue to roil the political waters, but for the first time, an openly gay man will be part of the cabinet discussing them. Member of Parliament from Nova Scotia Scott Bryson was named Parliamentary Secretary for the Prime Minister this week as Paul Martin officially replaced the retiring Jean Chrétien as PM. Bryson had been a candidate for leadership of the Progressive Conservatives, but when that party merged with the right-wing Canadian Alliance to form a new Conservative Party of Canada last week, Bryson defected to the ruling Liberal Party. Announcing his defection, he said, "All Progressive Conservatives now face a choice as to which political party in this new political landscape best reflects their personal values and beliefs. I've made my choice."
Rumors have been rife that the new PM Martin is not as ready as his predecessor to open full equal marriage rights to same-gender couples, particularly since recent polling has found only about 30% support for that move, while another 30% would support a separate legal category for same-gender couples. When questioned at the time of his swearing-in, Martin said the cabinet would discuss the matter, but his choice for Justice Minister, MP for Montreal Erwin Cotler, told reporters he thinks the government should add the possibility of civil unions for gays and lesbians to the questions that were already sent to the Supreme Court of Canada for review by the Chrétien administration. Relations with the U.S. are part of Bryson's new responsibilities, and border-crossing gay and lesbian spouses have already begun to create issues.
But while sexual orientation clearly hasn't hampered Bryson's political career, that's not always the case elsewhere. This week, Peru's President Alejandro Toledo demanded the resignation of Prime Minister Dr. Beatriz Moreno and all her cabinet in the wake of rumors including lesbian baiting. Moreno, a political independent and attorney, was appointed Peru's first ever female PM just 6 months ago, is 56, unmarried, and shares a home with another woman and with her own aunt. She declares she is heterosexual. Reporters said it was Moreno herself who told them off the record that Peru's Roman Catholic Cardinal Juan Luis Cipriani had warned her that a political rival, she believed to be former PM Luis Solari, had told him Moreno's cohabitant was her partner in a lesbian relationship he labeled immoral. However, both the Cardinal and the former PM have denied any such conversations ever occurred. Still, Moreno's latest public approval rating was more than 60%, while Toledo's is well below 20%, and there's continuing speculation as to her own possible presidential candidacy.
The two-year-old coalition government of the German state of Hamburg rocked in August by one-party leader's outing threat that gay mayor Ole von Beust viewed as attempted political extortion fell apart this week. Christian Democrat von Beust fired right-winger Ronald Schill from public office in August, but the upstart political party Schill founded remained a coalition partner. This past week, the national chair of the Schill party, Mario Mettbach, announced that Schill was no longer the Hamburg state party chair, and Schill responded by declaring a ban on Mettbach as national chair. Mettbach is also currently Hamburg's construction minister, and the hoopla was viewed as Ronald Schill's threat to have his followers abandon the coalition government. Von Beust called this Schill party infighting an undignified Punch and Judy show with psychopathic traits, said he would not stand for this political blackmail any more than he had for August's personal threat, and called for new elections in February.
In Chile, a prominent judge was suspended this week in the wake of revelations that he'd visited a gay bathhouse. Judge Daniel Calvo, married to a woman and father of five children, had been assigned by Chile's Supreme Court to lead the investigation into a suspected pedophile ring and child prostitution. During that investigation, TV reporters with a hidden camera taped a conversation at the bathhouse between its former owner and Calvo that revealed the judge's prior patronage there. Learning of the tape before its early November broadcast, Calvo issued a statement in early October affirming that he'd been to the bathhouse but denying that he's gay. He also claimed that the former bathhouse owner was hoping to use the tape to get him off the pedophile case. Calvo did leave that investigation in November, though reports differ as to whether he recused himself or the Supreme Court removed him. This week, the Supreme Court suspended Calvo for 4 months while it investigates him, an investigation which could well result in his expulsion from the judiciary. The whole affair is widely considered a serious setback in Chile's progress towards equality for gays and lesbians. But also this week, the former bathhouse owner and the 5 members of the Chilevisión TV news team that made the tape were indicted for taping Calvo without his consent. If they're convicted, sentences could run to 1.5 years plus fines.
And finally, as the notorious Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on U.S. military service by gays and lesbians passed its 10th anniversary on November 30th, 3 retired career service members of unprecedented high rank came out as gay men to protest it. Army Brigadier General Keith Kerr, Army Brigadier General Virgil Richard, and Coast Guard Rear Admiral Alan Steinman all made their first public disclosures of their sexual orientation to the New York Times. Previously, the highest-ranking service member to come out was openly lesbian Washington State National Guard Colonel Greta Kammermeyer. The 3 men had joined a dozen other former officers organized by the Service Members Legal Defense Network to call for an end to the policy and for gays and lesbians to be allowed to serve openly. They said the policy is ineffective and actually serves as a ban. In fact, it's led to discharge for some 10,000 service members. They maintain that it's the policy and not the presence of gays and lesbians that's been damaging to recruitment, retention, and military readiness. And they were heartfelt in declaring that it also undermines core military values of truth, honor, dignity, respect, and integrity. Admiral Steinman, who didn't even tell his family he was gay until after his retirement, said, "I was denied the opportunity to share my life with a loved one, to have a family, to do all the things that heterosexual Americans take for granted. That's the sacrifice I made to serve my country."
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 13th, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's a nice evening to go walking in the neighborhood, except you got to be careful. And Chris is here with us from Q-Tro.
Yes.
And I know you're going to be here secretly recruiting some people, maybe not so secretly, but let's talk about safety issues.
Well, one of the things you get with, when you talk about safety, this is the time of year everybody talks about it. You see it on the news stations. They send out one of their intrepid reporters on the coldest, wettest day out to some mall. And the rules they tell you then are the same rules to follow year-round, especially in the Montrose. Don't walk alone. Keep your head up. Keep aware of your surroundings. Put your keys in your hand, ready to defend yourself if necessary. And with Montrose, just don't be so hammered when you come out of the clubs that you don't know what's going on.
Well, not every one of those things is so easily to follow. For example, you're not always with somebody. I mean, this is a city where everybody jumps in their own car to drive from place one to place two.
True.
If you all want to meet somewhere to, you know, socialize at a bar, you can't always park in the same location. And the bars in the neighborhood don't have big parking lots that you can park right in front of their places. And that's actually part of the charm of what the stuff goes in Montrose, is that you may have to walk a couple blocks.
True. But it's always best to take that first chance and take a look and see what parking's available. Spend the $5, $4 or $5, depending on the night and the club. Get the valet parking. Get someone else to move your car around for you. Park in the parking lots that are just off to the side that aren't there. Consider that as one drink. Consider that an insurance policy.
And also, some of the sidewalks, there either aren't sidewalks, or the sidewalks are in bad shape, or there's a lot of trees around the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not overly safe to walk in the streets, but sometimes that's the better choice.
Yeah, and technically it's illegal to walk in the streets, but the simple fact is if you walk through the neighborhoods, even during the daylight hours, the sidewalks are usually uprooted by a lot of these old growth trees. They're overgrown by shrubbery. At nighttime, there are a lot of the trees will overhang and cover the street lights, the ones that are out there. So there's plenty of places where you can run into trouble where it doesn't even require another person to intervene to cause you harm. You can just trip walking down one of these sidewalks without any trouble on your own.
Absolutely. And I know, I try to do some walking in the neighborhood too, and I don't even know if there's any regulations by the city where you have to even have sidewalks in certain places, or whether you have to keep the sidewalks clean or up to date, or the fact that these trees just grow right into the sidewalks and nobody takes care of that.
I'm not sure about city regulations, but something like that you would think would be civic association minded to make it a safer neighborhood for the community who actually lives there, not the ones who come in, as the majority of our community does, of coming in to for entertainment purposes. But you would think they would take the extra effort to make sure that they can walk down the street when they're walking their dog in relative safety, and apparently that's not an issue for them.
And one of the other things you talked about was maybe take one less drink. And the reality is you're not supposed to be driving drunk. You should probably not be walking drunk either. And, you know, you need to be responsible for, you know, for yourself.
Yeah, if you're going to get to a state of inebriation in the club, and whether you're walking back to your home if you're in the neighborhood, or to a hotel, or to your car, the simple fact is that you have to at least have enough awareness of what's around you. And, you know, you might be able to sober up a little bit when you get in the car and you think you can handle it once you're in a car and there's the extra lights. But walking that block or two down some of these streets is not the safest of ventures when you're a clear mind, and when the fact is that you're fumbling with your car keys, your mind is a little flustered, you're thinking of that guy that you wanted to get the number from that you didn't, and you're kicking yourself for that. Next thing you know, there's somebody actually kicking you.
The other thing I wanted to say too, and I'm guilty of this as well, we get very blasé. You know the neighborhood. You've done this 1,000 times. You've walked from your car to the bar, from the bar to your car, from the radio station to Walgreens. You know, and you've never had a problem. It's a nice, quiet little neighborhood. Well, you know, it only takes one time.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. I mean, when you talk about, you can drive from home to work every day of the week, 5 days a week, for years upon years, and not get into an accident. Then all of a sudden, something happens. Same thing when you're walking down the street. Just consider that there's a lot more opportunities when you're walking down the street because you're going a lot slower. Someone may be in those bushes. They may not be. The environment around you is not working sometimes in your favor. And it's one of those things that the numbers eventually are going to catch up to people.
Well, the truth is also, I mean, we'd all like to promote people to be able to walk more than driving two blocks, you know, where a lot of people do in this city. I mean, I've seen people drive across the street to get from one place to another. And, you know, for health reasons, it'd be nice if we all could walk more. But you have to be aware of when you're doing it.
Well, the other thing, too, I think, beyond that is just, you know, it's like anything else. It's opportunity. You know, people that come into the Montrose, quote-unquote, looking for gay people, they're going to pick the victim that strikes them as the easiest target. If you happen to be the person that's by yourself on a dark street, like Chris said, somewhat inebriated, slow reaction time, you're a much more attractive target than a big, burly bruiser person who's obviously sober and is on a well-lit street with several other people around.
And with that same thing also is you don't necessarily have to wear your finest jewelry or expensive watches, you know. And, you know, people in New York always dress down.
Yeah. And, I mean, just the main thing is keep your head up. Because very simply, if you're up and you're keeping your eyes around and you're looking around, a person who's interested in attacking you is going to be taken aback by that, because they think you're in the game, you're watching what's going on, and you know, this person isn't going to be prepared when I start to walk up to them. And unfortunately, sometimes they adjust for that, like from what we're hearing from the incident with Alan Tibbetts.
Yes. With all of this, what does Q Patrol do?
Well, what we do is we're a citizens patrol group here in the Montrose area. We've been at it for 12 years. And what we do is we're an extra set of eyes and ears for the police. And because we know we can't put cops on every corner. And, you know, there's a lot of people who don't want to have a cop on every corner, especially with what goes on in the Montrose sometimes. So what we do is we go out to try and prevent hate crimes by being a visual deterrent to it, by letting people know who are coming down from the suburbs usually, or coming in and they want to score some drugs in the ward area where there is a large selling of that. They figure they need a couple extra bucks. They figure we're easy targets. Those are the main reasons why people come into here. But we want to be a visual deterrent and say, hey, if you come down here and you're going to perpetrate this stuff, you know, someone's going to be watching out for these other people. We're going to chase you off. And if need be, we'll call the police. We'll, if we go to court, we'll go and testify and say, hey, this person's coming into this neighborhood just to beat up on people, just to mug them and rob them for money, or just because someone thinks they're gay. I mean, it doesn't even require that someone is actually gay to be attacked for it to be considered a hate crime. If someone just perceives a person to be. I remember a couple of years ago, there's this former pro wrestler who was walking his little foo-foo dog over by Rich's. He was gay-bashed. And he's not gay, but it was the perception of you're walking near a gay bar, you got a little foo-foo dog, you're gay. And that was the reason for the attack. And unfortunately, we still have that kind of mentality nowadays.
Yeah, so you know, Q Patrol does not actually intervene, right?
No. Okay. We are not the guardian angels. We are not security guards. We are not wannabe cops. We're not commandos, that sort of thing. We got a cell phone. We call the police. The police know that when we call and we tell them that we're Q Patrol, when we've called, they respond because they know it's something is important. The last time we called it, we had a guy who was driving through the neighborhood drunk, almost hit a couple of people. Well, then he took him on a little bit of a chase, and next thing you know, there was officers from about three or four jurisdictions and a police helicopter.
Do you have a special number you call with the police? Or?
No, we call the standard 911, or if it's non-life-threatening, the 713-222-3131. But the dispatchers know that when we go in there, we refer to the fact, when we call in, we say that we're Q Patrol, we're a Citizens on Patrol organization, then that helps trigger a few other things, saying, hey, this is someone who's working with us. It's not just, I'm not going to say it escalates the call, but they know from the fact that there's something going on, that an organization that's assisting on patrol is calling in.
It makes it more legitimate as a report.
Yes.
Yes, so what are the hours and when do you all go out?
Well, unfortunately right now, because of the number of members we have, we're only going out mainly on Saturday nights, 9:30 to 12:30. We do want to increase these numbers and go back to doing Friday night patrols frequently. Whenever special events are occurring in the neighborhood, of going and doing and covering those events as well. When for like Christmas time, if there's an interest in there, especially New Year's, which is going to be falling not on a Friday or a Saturday this year. These sort of events where there's going to be an increased number of people in the neighborhood, plus the fact when you start getting some of the kids out of school, that also causes some of the problems to occur. So we want to try and expand these hours, and what we need is the people out there. Right now we're doing financially well, which is something that a lot of organizations can't say. Fortunately, we've got a kind of a guardian angel who's watching out for us that way. But the thing is, we need people out there. I'll steal a phrase from somebody there. We've got the bread in the oven, but we need the meat on the street.
So how can somebody get involved?
Well, you need to contact us. The phone number is 713-528-SAFE. That's 7233. Or you can send us an email at qpatrolhouston@yahoo.com. And we'll get you put in through that way. We've got a Yahoo group up right now, Q Patrol Houston. And probably within the next couple of months, we're actually going to launch a new website for that and to try and get some more information out there to the people. The only downside is we can't take qpatrol.org. That beat to the punch by Seattle.
Well, there's always ways to work with it. Joan, you've got somebody on the line?
Yes, I have Alan Tibbetts on the line. Alan, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, first, let's ask the important question. How are you doing?
I'm doing much, much better, thank you. Largely in part, I feel, from the support of the LGBT community in Houston, as well as my friends and you know, all of the people who have been supporting me up here in New York. So I'm doing a lot better, but thanks for asking.
And I guess without going into, like, huge amounts of details, just kind of give us a quick general overview.
Sure.
of what happened.
Sure. I came down to Houston, actually, to perform on World AIDS Day. A friend of mine, Jane Wiener, who I danced with in the Doug Elkins Dance Company for years, had moved down to Houston quite some time ago, and we've always been sort of politically active and see that making art and politics are really not very separate at all. And unfortunately, you know, to make art a political statement in and of itself. thanks to the administration.
Amen.
So, you know, I came down there to perform a World AIDS Day concert for something that she started with Dominic Walsh of Houston Ballet called the Illumination Project, and the monies were being channeled to Baylor Pediatric AIDS Foundation, as well as the Caring Safe Place, the transitional housing situation for people living with HIV and AIDS in Houston. So I came down for that event. I traveled down on Thanksgiving, and that Friday night we had gone to the movies, and I was staying in the Montrose at a bed and breakfast, and had gone out to a bar and spent a whopping half hour there and decided I needed to go home. I had a long day ahead of me in the theater the following day, and was walking back crossing Avondale. I was, you know, right at Avondale at Whitney, and there was a parked car right at the corner, and a gentleman got out of the passenger side of that car, looked up at the street sign, and I continued walking past him, and he said, I'm sorry to bother you, but do you know where, and excuse me for not knowing my Houston geography, but I believe he said Stratford Street is, and I said, oh yeah, as a matter of fact, I just crossed it, it's a couple blocks back that way. And he said, thanks so much. And I took two steps away from him. And that's when he started to attack me and beat me with a lead pipe. And I sustained about seven separate hits to the head, five of which broke the skin open. And it required 37 staples to hold my my skull back together. And, you know, I immediately, upon the first blow, as soon as I realized, you know, that I was being attacked, started to scream and yell for help and, you know, scream that I was being assaulted, and was running from him, but he was, you know, right behind me and sort of wrestled me between two cars and continued to beat me, and then said, you know, give me your effing money, bitch. And I said, yes, you need to stop hitting me for me to do that. And I handed my cash over, and he ran off and got into the getaway car that, you know, that someone was driving, and drove off down Avondale. And I, you know, had that moment where you go, I should look at the make of the car, I should look at the license plate. And then I looked down at myself and realized I was bleeding out and really in a pretty severe state, and wasn't entirely sure how long I would either live or be conscious. So I made it into the bed and breakfast and yelled for help. And my friend Jane, I called her, she came and took me to Methodist Hospital, and they put me back together again. That's the long and the short of the attack. So
had you ever been attacked or mugged before? This like your first horrible experience?
I would say nothing nearly as dramatic as that. You know, I've lived in New York for years and lived in the East Village and still live in the East Village. And, you know, back in the early 80s, you know, it was considered a very sketchy neighborhood. And yet I never really felt in danger, you know, probably foolishly so at times. However, you know, there's always folks on the street. So, you know, even, you know, if you are in a potentially threatening situation in the city, you know, more often than not, and this is not to say that, you know, crimes against the LGBT community in New York, you know, don't happen, because they certainly do. You know, but I suppose I've been fortunate in that sense in New York. But the difference being in Houston is that there are areas like that where, you know, ostensibly for a period of time, you know, enough time it takes to beat someone within an inch of their life, you know, no one may be around. So in that sense, you know, it's a little more dangerous, you know, and I caution, you know, people in the Houston area to really be wise about it. You know, I didn't really think that I was in any danger, you know, but now looking back, had I known that Cube Patrol existed, you know, I certainly would have, you know, taken a buddy along for the walk to get, you know, to where it is I'm going, or I've called a cab, you know, but I was like, yeah, I'm five blocks from where I'm going. Mm-hmm. Cute little residential neighborhood, nothing to fear, you know. So, and I like to think, you know, the gay and lesbian community tends to be hypervigilant anyways, because there's so many crimes that are committed against us. And, you know, as a whole, we're usually, you know, relatively oppressed. So I think that, you know, ability to dissociate and that hypervigilance that we have to, you know, sort of operate from all the time as queer people, in many ways, I think, is my saving grace. And that, you know, had I not dissociated really quickly during the attack, you know, God only knows what would have happened to me. So, for me, that's really where the tragedy lies. You know, it's unfortunate as queer people that we have to, you know, have that muscle be so developed, you know, wouldn't it be nice to really relax into life, you know, and the liberties that we're all afforded, you know, or that most people are afforded, but unfortunately we are not. So,
I also wanted to say that you did actually perform on a Monday.
I did perform
on
Monday.
I wanted to give you props for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I had to alter the piece slightly because he messed up my shoulder pretty good. So there was a few things that had to change choreographically. But fortunately, you know, the older I get, the easier my choreography becomes. So I didn't really have to jump or turn or do anything too dramatic. So I managed to pull off a performance with a tasteful little Erykah Badu-esque hat. Mm-hmm. I might add. So there you have it.
Would you come back to Houston?
Absolutely. You know, I've performed there quite a bit, and Diverse Works is just such a great theater and, you know, has such wonderful programming and has supported, you know, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender work for, you know, so long that I would absolutely, you know, be happy to perform there again. Sixto Wagon, who is, you know, one of the curators and directors there, is just, you know, I really stand behind his programming, and I would go back there, you know, in a flash. So, you know, I'm not a scared. They didn't beat it out of me.
Yeah, I guess that was the next question. You know, you talked about your physical state. How is your mental state? How is your emotional state? Because there's a lot more to this than just the actual incident.
Absolutely.
And the physical injuries.
Yeah, I think, you know, more will be revealed as time goes on. You know, I think, you know, immediately after the attack, you know, it's extremely personal. It's that inner circle, you know, like the me of, you know, my flesh has just been altered. And then it very quickly, you know, became political. And that's, I've done a lot of work with ACT UP and Queer Nation here in New York. And so I hop on that very quickly. And it just recently, I kind of felt I need to regroup a bit. You know, I need to just sort of assess where I am in all of this, you know, and how I'm feeling. And it is, you know, it's something that plays over and over and over in your mind when you experience, you know, a physical attack, you know, regardless of whether it's a gay bashing or, you know, whatever sort of attack it is. I think there's constant, you know, why did it happen? What could I have done? You know, what would I do differently? So there's a lot of sort of, you know, the tape is running on that. And I'm sure I'll find out more as it goes on. But fortunately, I'm relatively therapized. I have a strong Buddhist practice, which I think, you know, it has been very helpful and also, you know, enabled me to see the suffering of my attacker, you know, which I have to say is profound. So, you know, as much as I feel there needs to be, you know, a stronger police presence on the streets of the Montrose, you know, and, you know, bless Q Patrol. And I hope that a lot of, you know, Houston residents come out to support them and up those patrols and, you know, make presence, you know, even stronger on the streets. But, you know, right in tandem with that, running parallel to it, you know, education, you know, is just so important, you know, because here's a kid who, you know, ostensibly has, you know, no ability to see that what he has done, you know, is stemming from his own suffering, and it would just be equally important, you know, get it at its roots. You know, it's, you know, patching things up once they've happened is important, but it's like, this should never happen. You know, violence against other people just shouldn't happen, and how do we quelch that, you know?
So. My name is Chris Harris. I'm with the Q Patrol. I wanted to, first of all, hi. One thing I wanted to commend you on was the fact of afterwards, after the attack, the fact that you were able to reclaim yourself from the victimhood by contacting Q Patrol, letting us know. We were out the following night, unfortunately, and kept an eye on that area. And the fact that you did follow through and file a report and press the fact that it was a hate crime. The
right.
fact that, unfortunately, a lot of people, they get attacked and they do fall into the old realm of, you know, so what, I'm okay, I'm alive, they got some money, and don't report it and let people know that, hey, there's an issue out in this area. And unfortunately, the street you were on, we know all too well. We, like I said, we've been here for 12 years, and it wasn't until like 4 years ago we finally allowed people to walk on that while on patrol. Because that's one of the scarier streets in the neighborhood. And,
so cute, though. Such cute little houses.
Yes.
I was literally thinking minutes before the attack, this is just a charming little area. So, yeah, who knows?
But that's the main thing, is the fact that you were able, even though you were a victim here, you were able to reclaim some of yourself back from the fact of being able to pursue this to the extent it has, and the fact that the community, not just the GLBT community here in Houston, but the mainstream attention here in Houston that this incident has garnered. It's amazing, the fact that we're getting this type of response, the fact that I can tell you for a fact the HPD and the Constable's Office and the Sheriff's Department have increased their patrols in the neighborhood.
Fantastic.
On Saturday night, there was two constables out there the entire evening. I drove through the neighborhood a little while ago. There was HPD that was actually doing a patrol in the neighborhood during a Monday, which is highly irregular. And then we're going to be having a meeting
on Wednesday
with HPD.
Right.
A small meeting of about 40 people to see what can be done to start the process of trying to get people out here, because, you know, I mean, like you said, this is 2004. There's no reason in the world someone should be beat upside the head because they went for a walk.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'd like to say also, you know, like, you know, circa 1983-84, when I was involved in things that, you know, of this nature, you know, here in New York, we, you know, often were running to, you know, sort of abash the police department, and rightly so. But everything was handled so gracefully, and I was treated with such respect and dignity, you know, with HPD, with the hospital, with everyone, you know. So, you know, kudos to Houston on that. You know, I felt, you know, really just carried by everyone, and that there was genuine concern and genuine dismay at what had happened to me. So, you know, that you get a big shout out from New York to, you know, HPD. You know, I have to say, really, really wonderful, you know, the way they handled everything. But, you know, unfortunately, these things still happen. I'd also like to say that, you know, as a New Yorker, I think it might be, you know, without, you know, living in Houston, so, you know, forgive me if I misspeak, but it's a little easier for me perhaps to be the voice of this tragedy, you know, where if I was living in Houston, you know, perhaps I might be a bit more cautious about going so public and, you know, speaking to it. So, you know, a smaller town, and of course, you know, a feeling where it's like, if I say this really sucked and I got, you know, really in a bind and this shouldn't happen, I might be, you know, the source, you know, I might become more of a target, you know, in the future. So I really felt encouraged by, you know, folks down there to say, hey, please bring voice to this because it's harder for us to do it. So if I can be the, you know, figurehead for that, I'm more than happy to. So there you have it.
Great. Well, Alan, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us tonight. We wish you all the best. Hope your next visit to Houston has a happier ending.
Absolutely. And I'll be down there next December 1st to perform again.
Oh, great. Well, thank you again so much, and you're listening to...
Noel, before we go, I do want to mention our friend Sally Huffer sent this note to me. The anti-violence program of Montrose Counseling Center includes the nation's only full-service 24-hour sexual assault and domestic violence program specifically designed to serve gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender population. The anti-gay violence program also provides individual, couples, and family therapy, group therapy, emergency crisis service through the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard of Houston. And this is available by calling 529-3211, 713 area code. And they will help you to fill out any type of reports with the police department, and they also provide services for rape crisis programs, and so they're there also. In fiscal year 2002, MCC provided direct services to 277 people in the anti-violence program. 55 received services for domestic abuse/violence, 170 received services for sexual abuse assault survivors, and 52 persons came to MCC for bias hate crime services, and they appreciate us telling you all that. And that's with the Montrose Counseling Center. The switchboard number again is 713-529-3211.
And I want to add another thing. Houston City Council Member Ada Edwards has stated that if you do not feel comfortable coming forward or filing a police report yourself, you may use her office as a liaison. She will be happy to do that. She said she does understand that not everybody is out and may not feel comfortable. And she said if it's more, if people feel more comfortable using her office and her office's services to get that taken care of, they are welcome to do so.
Or at a bare minimum, call us here at Q Patrol, because we file reports with everything that goes on in the patrol to HPD and also to the Montrose Counseling Center.
How can somebody get involved with Q Patrol if they'd like?
It's 713-528-SAFE at 7233, or you can send us an email at qpatrolhouston@yahoo.com. We don't require any special training, just have to be 18 years of age or older, and willing to come out and help the community out for at least one weekend a month.
And there will be an open meeting between the community and HPD at the Metropolitan Multi-Service Center on West Gray at 5:30 on Wednesday the 17th.
And that's at 1475 West Gray.
That's right.
1, 2, 3, 4. Toys never could fix the poor little rich boy.